Welcome to this workshop, and my name is Mike Krauss, and this is my wife, Judy, and we're really glad to be here. We had a good time last hour. Dan said, I work for the Navigators and teach and counsel from the Bible, and we have been in Oklahoma City about a year and a half, ministering to Americans and some internationals. Before that, we were at OSU for 4.5 years, that obscure university in the east of Oklahoma. And we really enjoyed our time there. We ministered to Americans and internationals. So that was very enjoyable for us. We both have lived and traveled overseas. Judy lived in Japan, and I was in the Navy. But this morning, we want to consider some differences that you have seen between your country and its people and America and its people. So we talked about some last hour, but if you would just tell me some differences that you have seen, and if you can be specific, that would help. I'll let you think a second. Anybody have one they'd like to say?
Culture.
Culture? Can you be a little more specific? How? What way?
For example,
you mean the value of education or approach to education?
The approach, yeah, the method. The method.
Okay.
How is it different from your country?
The way we, family education, that is the basic unit.
Oh.
And we have a little difference in the way that the Oriental people teach this family members.
Okay. So what you're saying, I'm not sure I understand, but are you saying that in Oriental culture, the family is the setting for a lot of education? Okay. That's a good observation, because in America, we say, oh, we send our kids off to be educated somewhere else. And much of the family doesn't take responsibility for
also,
the education.
Society education should be mentioned. From family to society. Between Oriental and Western cultures, somewhat different.
Okay, we're talking about differences that you have observed between your country and your people and America and Americans. So keep coming with your observations.
I can say one more thing about habits, or like some books, but more specific, I give one example that I like soccer, but I cannot define soccer here.
Yes.
I play soccer a lot in my country, but you know, I have a hard time to find a soccer team to play soccer with, something like that.
That's very good. Okay, anything, any other observations you've made you'd like to tell us? Yes.
I want to say that what you were pretty close. Like, for the purpose of the game, for example, boys sometimes see and hear that they take it so seriously. And then you go to play. That, or, all the purpose, it has to be that you have to win, no matter what.
Yeah.
And we come from another experience that whenever we come to play, perhaps we want to have fun and enjoy the game. And to play.
That's good. Okay. That's very good. Okay.
We're that group of ones we experience and nobody seems to understand or point of view too. Because like this game, soccer, everywhere you go, it's the most popular sport in the whole world.
Yes.
No matter if you're in few people or I'm from the town, but we come here, and that's the only sport we can get into. Because I'm going to watch football, and I think most of the guys here, they don't probably, they see much, but they probably won't enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this year, well, last year was the first year that there was very good coverage of the World Soccer Cup in America. Yeah. So, be patient. Okay, I think at this point, Judy is going to talk about some cultural things. So I'll let her talk about those.
Okay, you noticed I was laughing at my husband because the point which you were making is that Americans are goal-oriented, not event-oriented. And my husband very patiently wrote down what you said and said, okay, we have to go on, because he is goal-oriented. We have a workshop to give. And at the beginning, let me say that to understand culture, we could take a whole semester or a whole year of classes. You could come every day for an hour or 2 hours, and we still would not cover everything. So what we are giving you today is very simple, a very, very small portion. And so I have just picked four areas. Actually, there is an anthropologist who has written some books about culture, and he has described 100 areas, 10 major areas going down and 10 across, and then you match them up on the grid, and you have 100 different areas that you could talk about. So I'm only choosing four. It's a very small percentage. And then we have planned our workshop for the very lowest possible level of English speakers who might be here. So please don't be insulted if you're in graduate school, but we wanted to do it in such a way that everyone could understand. You brought out point C very well. Americans are goal-oriented. Now, last week we were talking about this workshop with some Japanese couples that were helping in English, and I asked them, what do you think about Americans? Oh, Americans are so patient. I said, really? Oh, they stand in line to get into a restaurant. They stand in line to buy tickets for a football game. And I said, but they won't listen to you. If they can't understand your English, they'll walk away. And that is an example of being goal-oriented rather than being people or relationship oriented. They will stand in line to do something or to get something, but not to wait. We have a terrible example of this terrible because it should never have happened. An African friend of ours was studying at Oklahoma State University. Maybe I shouldn't say that, but anyway. And he had the unfortunate experience to be in a department where, although it's one of the, supposed to be one of the best departments in America for that particular degree, they don't care about the people. They receive a lot of grants from the United States government and from other governments in order to study problems in those countries. And the professors are always traveling to those countries. But they don't care about the people. And this international student told us, we feel used. We hate Americans because they just want the money from our government to get the grant, but they aren't really interested in us. And sometimes that's not true. Sometimes it's just a misunderstanding. In this case, unfortunately, we heard it too many times, and we had too many examples, and I'm afraid that we do not recommend international students to that department at Oklahoma State, because they are used. They are not encouraged. Now, there are other departments at OSU which are excellent and where that does not happen. But this one particular department, it's an example, a very bad example, where the department is so goal-oriented, being number one in the country, that they are willing to use people who will be the future leaders of the world. This man someday may be in a very high government position in his government, and he will not be kind toward America. But they have forgotten that. All they're thinking about is we want our department to be number one. So I'm very sorry to tell you that, but you may find that in your desire to make friends with Americans, you may find that more often than you care to. Americans are very time conscious. You noticed this morning that Dan held up, or Chip held up, the schedule many times. This is our schedule. It's very important, he said. This tells you what to do. We have our watches. And American professors frown if you walk in late. And in fact, in the language schools, I don't know about the regular classroom, but in the language schools, if you are late for class, the teacher will mark it. And if you have 3 or 4 late marks, they will mark it as an absence. And if you have so many absences, it's automatic failure. Now, that doesn't happen in your universities. If you hand an assignment in late, the professor will automatically either fail you or give you a lower grade. So time is very important to Americans. We talk about time wasted. If you go to many conferences like this, you will find one workshop, time management. There are many books on the bookshelves about time management. You should do this, and I have developed the art. I can turn on the tea kettle, put the toast in the toaster, turn on my curling iron to curl my hair, and put breakfast on the table, maybe while I am talking on the telephone. Many things. We are taught from the time we're children that we need to be very conscious of time. Americans are very ethnocentric. That means self-centered as a country. Americans have close groups of friends, and it's very difficult to break into that group of friends. Perhaps you've discovered that. If you listen to the 6 o'clock news, how many times can you hear news about your country, although you know something very important was going to happen that day? You hear about Okarchi or Hennessy or some other very small town. They may spend 10 minutes of the news talking about some very small place in Oklahoma that no one in the world has heard about. But that day in your country, something very important might have happened. And the man will say, oh yes, by the way, Brazil lost today in their soccer match. And one Brazilian student I had last year while that was going on was so discouraged. He went everywhere. He couldn't find the game on television. And then Brazil did win right up till the end, you remember? And he said, oh, in my country, teacher, people would be in the streets having parties, and here no one cares. No one even knew about Brazil playing soccer, or Korea, for that matter. Korea lost along the way, too. But you, in your country, you get the American news at the same time Americans do. You know what is going on in America, in other parts of Asia, in Europe, in Africa, but Americans don't. They are ignorant. It is a barrier to helping you understand or and make friends, because they look at you and they say, oh, I don't know if they're refugees or if they're Native Americans or what. So they just don't say anything because they're fearful. Finally, Americans are very possessive about space and property. I told the story the last hour that when I was living in Japan, I attended a concert that some Americans gave. They were both Americans and Japanese. And I noticed as we were leaving, we got in the elevator, that all of the Americans were standing in a line in the elevator. And no one was touching anyone else. No one was talking and no one was touching. And I had lived in Japan several years at that time, and I thought, huh. Because I left the elevator to get on the train and be like this with thousands of other people that I had never seen before and would never see again. And we would all be touching each other. But Americans have a sense around them, the anthropologists say about 12 inches, that is personal space. And if you come too close, they will back up. They feel very close. They feel uncomfortable when you're so close. So that's one, just a territory or space. Another thing is that people talk about my room, my books, my things. This is my car. Every teenager wants to have his own car. He doesn't want to share the family car. It's too inconvenient to share. Where you grow up in a country where you have to share, perhaps, because of space limitations, physically, geographically. So that might be one thing which could hinder. Then I want to go on and talk about what we call culture shock. It happens to everyone whenever they go to another country, and you might be in one of these stages. Now, it's possible to land in a stage and never leave it. And it's also possible to go, and any place along the way you may stop in that stage, or you may go through an entire stage. First of all, before you go to that country, and when you're anticipating, you're very excited, you're thinking about all the things that you're going to do that are new, you're looking forward to it. When you get there, you want to do this and this and this. It's like being in love. You only see everything very favorably. Then, some people never leave this. Now, if you only go on a tour to another country, you're in this stage. You never have to interact with the culture. A few of the wives that I'm helping, Japanese wives, are in that situation. Their husbands speak English. They have children. They're at home. They don't have to speak English. Husband pays the rent. Husband takes care of all of the arrangements. So they never interact with the culture. That may be true for you if you leave your apartment and run to class and take notes and come back and you never interact. You could be stuck in this place. Or you could move, probably though, you've moved on to stage two. Stage two is when you begin to feel very lonely. You feel homesick. You begin to notice that everything is not good about America, like you thought before you came, and you begin to get discouraged. At this stage, some of your problem might be language, but I think it's very typical. I have never felt so lonely as I felt when I lived in Japan, and I love Japan, but I had deep feelings of loneliness. Especially when my language was so poor, I wanted to talk about something besides how much does this cost, how is the weather. You know, I wanted to talk about what I was feeling and thinking, and I couldn't at that point. felt very, very lonely. At that point, you can choose one of two roads. Either you can choose to spend all of your time with people of your own group, your own language group, or other internationals, and talk about how bad America is and how that this was not fair and this was not fair, or just forget about America. And you live here, but you don't really live here. And that happens to many Americans who go to live in other countries. They just stay in that. They talk about them and us. Or you can go the other way, which is what happened to me the first 2 years I lived in Japan. You can forget your own culture and you say, well, I'm going to be American. You refuse to speak your own language or eat your own food. You have only American friends. You try to dress like Americans, act like Americans. At this point, many people fall in love with an American. And they think life will be wonderful. Unfortunately. And that's what I did. I can remember shortly before coming home for the first time after having been in Japan, looking in the mirror and realizing I am not Japanese. I thought I was. I had only Japanese friends. I ate only Japanese food. I spoke only Japanese. And it was a shock to me. I am not Japanese. I am American. Then, finally, hopefully, you will come to the stage where you realize this is good, this is bad. You can act as you would in your own culture, or you can move and act in an American culture. You feel comfortable in both cultures. That's eventually the place we want to become, to be world citizens, so that we can fit into whatever situation. We are still ourselves, but we can function in another culture if we need to. Now, this probably isn't true for you, but for some people, language is a problem. I've observed in my language teaching that generally there are two kinds of people. One person comes in, and he's very confident about his language, and maybe people are not understanding him. But he's very confident, and he says, well, that's too bad, that's their problem. And doesn't become a student again and learn, is it his pronunciation, is it his intonation, is it a case of vocabulary or some particular sound he's pronouncing incorrectly, or what it may just be a technical language problem, and he needs to become a learner. Or, more often than not, it's the other case. The person's language is fine. In the case of two Japanese women I'm tutoring now, their language is really much better than any American who has studied French or German or Spanish in any American situation. I know, I studied German 4 years, I studied French. I can't speak a word of French, and my German is limited to what I can read. I can't speak German. I could never function in Germany. So their language is really quite good, but they're fearful. They're afraid they won't be understood. They're afraid they'll say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing. And they need to develop confidence. And you might be in that place where you just need to try. And someone told me in Japan, if you really want to speak Japanese, Judy, you must be willing to be foolish and to be made a fool. You must be willing to make mistakes. And I said, okay, I will do it. And I have made and still make many mistakes in Japanese. But I think I got over the hurdle because I said, okay, I don't care. If I look foolish, I will try. Briefly, two more areas. You may have had a position of importance in your own country or a certain status, and you came to America, no one recognizes that. Or no one recognizes you, and you may feel uncomfortable because of that. You may feel that people treat you like a child. You don't understand oaky English. You don't understand slang. There may be some gestures or some sounds people make that you know mean something, but you don't know what they mean. and you may feel like an outsider. And it takes time. That's part of living in the culture. Then there are certain areas of common knowledge, the things that a mother teaches her child, and you don't know them because they are different for you and for us. For example, Americans might take off their shoes and put them on the counter and take out the shoe polish and polish them. And for a Japanese person to take off your shoes, which are very dirty, and put them on the counter where you will later chop vegetables or put dishes is terrible. Well, Americans don't think anything of it. That's an area of common knowledge. No Japanese child would put his shoes on inside the house or on the counter or on the table. But Americans don't know that, so they walk into Japanese homes with their dirty shoes. And there are many areas like that of common knowledge, things that your mother taught you that you think every person who is well brought up should know. And the same thing is true for America. American children are taught certain things. And by being observant and listening and watching, you can figure them out. Sometimes you won't learn them except in that way. Okay, let me turn it over to you. What time is it? Okay. You turn it over to Mike and let him give you some specific ideas about making friends.
Okay, we're on page 2. How many of you, how many have handouts? How many do not have a handout? How many have American friends? Would you raise your hand? Oh, no. A few. Okay. What have you done to make friends? Just tell us one thing you have done. Okay. Not too clear. They put the wrong letters in the chalk.
Is there something in common?
Yes. Okay, common interest. Okay, good. Thank you. Okay, anybody else like to tell us something you've done to make friends? These are very good. Talk. Find out about people. Okay, talk with them frequently or?
Get in touch with them. Keep in touch.
Keep in touch, okay. Okay, good. I want to say that it's probably more difficult for internationals to make friends with Americans than it is for Americans to make friends with internationals. But it's not impossible. As you see, there are many people here who have American friends. But it is sometimes a hard thing, and you must persevere. You must work at it if you want to make friends. But it's not impossible. I don't want you to come away with this from this workshop thinking, oh, I can't do it. It's not possible. I want to show you that there are possibilities to do that. But you will probably have to take more initiative to make American friends. Okay, let's talk about, on your handout on page 2, how to creating opportunities to make friends. And the first thing that was mentioned, very good, talking about various things, conversations. That's probably the first step. And you can talk about lots of different things. This gentleman mentioned school, family, common interests, differences. All of those are good. If you're working on a common project, obviously you're going to be talking about the project, a paper or a report of some kind, a lab experiment. You can certainly strike up a conversation there. Invitations are very good. You can, I'm thinking of one of three different kinds of invitations. One, you can invite yourself. If you know the person likes a certain kind of food, say they like the food from your country, you could say, well, I know that you like Chinese food, for example. I'd like to come over to your house and cook a Chinese meal for you. And lots of times they'll enjoy that. They'll let you come over and cook the meal for them. And secondly, you can invite people to your home for a meal, for a snack, to study, different things. When you're inviting to a meal, it's probably good to find out their preferences in food. If you don't know that, you'll want to find that out in conversation. If they like tacos or pizza or Chinese food or whatever. Kimchi. So find that out, and then you can just invite them. Well, I know that you like pizza, for example. Would you like to come over to my house and have pizza on Tuesday night? Now, one thing about food, Americans are a little picky about what they eat. They don't like animal stomachs, tongues, intestines, that kind of thing. Most Americans don't like that. And in Oklahoma, many Americans don't like fish products, or rice. So kind of figure out. The principle here is to figure out what they like and then cook accordingly. Okay, on page 3, you can invite somebody out for a meal. Food is such a natural thing. Everybody does it, you know, everybody eats. So it's a good thing to have casual conversation over a meal. And you can invite people out to a restaurant to eat, out for a Coke, whatever. But it's important to know, distinguish between two kinds of invitations. If you want to take that person out and buy their meal as well as your own, then you would say this: I'd like to take you out for dinner. When you say, I want to take you out for dinner, they know, they want to pay for the food. But if you want to go out and have a meal together and you want everybody to pay for their own meal, then you say, say, let's go out for lunch together. See, when you say out for lunch together, they'll know, we're paying for our own meals. And that will eliminate some confusion and maybe some embarrassment as to who's going to pay. Okay, our Japanese friends, they said that a good place they have found to make friends, where people are friendly, is an American church. Now, I'm sure that's not true with every church, but generally, people may be more friendly there. Okay, as was mentioned under point B here, common interests. Food is a common interest. School, hobbies, sports. And I think for women, men are probably a common interest, and vice versa. For men, women are a common interest. And clothing or fashions for women. Most women are fairly fashion conscious. Item C then is learning about what things interest Americans. And for men, this is a very good point, was made, I believe it was in last hour. Football is of very high importance to American men. And there are so many people watched the Super Bowl, last weekend, that I think the advertising costs $1 million a minute. They pay that because so many people are watching. And it's an event. So if you want to find something to talk about with American men, learn about football so you can talk about the teams and the plays and the penalties and what's involved in the game. And if you don't know about that, you could perhaps pick up a book, or if you're watching a game with somebody, ask them to explain what's going on here. The official will stop and do something, and if you don't know what it is, just ask. Now, golf and tennis and track and what you mentioned, soccer, are somewhat important, somewhat popular in America, but not very popular. Depends on the people. Cars. Well, let me see. Before I go into that, this Japanese couple, as a way to get to make friends and have people in their home, they had a Super Bowl party. And a lot of people do that. It's just an occasion to come and get together and watch the game and have a good time together. So that's an idea. Cars. In America, cars are very important. They represent, I think, a symbol of independence for men and somewhat a symbol of status. So men like to talk about cars, and that's something you can talk about. Okay, under D, you can watch people who make friends easily and see what they do and use those methods yourself. Now, if you talk to a person like that, they probably won't be able to tell you what they're doing. It just comes naturally. So you'll probably have to observe more than ask them what they're doing. And then be yourself. Act naturally. Don't be American. Don't try to be American. You're not. So just be yourself, and people will accept you as you are. F, be realistic in your expectations. Now, Judy mentioned that Americans are goal-oriented, time-conscious, and that's a fact of life. I don't know if it's good or bad, it just is. So take it for what it is, and don't expect people to just drop everything. Some people can do that, but not everybody can do that. So what I'm saying is have realistic expectations. If you know that a person has to schedule you in, well, you may have to adapt and be scheduled in. Okay. I think G is very important. As you make steps of friendship with people, you will want to watch how they respond to you. And these comments here are probably should be taken in with a view toward seeing it happen over several times, several initiatives that you make toward people, rather than just one case. So if you invite a person to do things with you several times, and they respond, "Well, yes, I'd like to do that," and they do things with you several times, then they're probably interested in you becoming a friend of yours and doing things together. But if they say, "Oh, yes," repeatedly, but they don't do it, then they probably aren't interested in becoming your friend. And they won't say no because they probably don't want to hurt your feelings. They don't want you to feel rejected. If they say, "Well, I can't do it this time, but I'd like to do it later," there may be one of two things happening. One, they really don't want to say no, but they just keep putting it off. And if they're not interested, they'll say that perhaps many times. "Well, I'd like to do it, but I can't do it now." So maybe they're not interested. But the other person is one who has a real conflict, who says, "Well, I have to do this tonight." And then when you ask them later, they'll say, "Oh, yes, I'd like to come," and they come. So they just had a conflict that one time. So keep pursuing that. Okay, if they don't respond, they're probably not interested. On page 4, libraries often have books on American manners, social customs. That might be good to look through a book like that. And we've just mentioned a few things here. Under table manners, it's considered impolite to put elbows on the table, although I must confess I do it from time to time. Americans don't like eating noises, slurping or belching, which in some cultures is a sign of appreciation, I understand, for the meal. So Americans don't like noises during the meal, although they will talk, but not with their mouth full. The napkin is a funny thing. If you have a cloth napkin, it's, I think, partly for looks, for show. And you can use it, but be very careful how you use it. Don't get it too dirty. But if you use a paper napkin, then that's okay. But the cloth napkin will be washed and used again for another person. I know that in some cultures it's not polite to eat all the food off of your plate. Or if you do that, they will put more on your plate. Okay, but in America, it's considered polite to eat everything on your plate. So don't worry about that. Smoking. If you smoke, it's good manners to ask your host or hostess or the person if it's okay to smoke. And they will say yes or no. Speaking your own language while with Americans. I think most Americans feel left out if you would turn to a friend from your homeland or who spoke your language and talked in your own language. They would feel left out, or they would feel that, well, maybe they're talking about me. And they would feel isolated. So they feel uncomfortable. So if you need to do that, if you need to ask a question or get a clarification, just be discreet about how you do it. What to avoid talking about? Let's see, there are probably a lot that could go under that, but in general, bloody types of topics, awful car accidents, operations, medical procedures, probably is not good to talk about that.
Are we talking about, did we forget to put at the table or in general?
Well, I think it could apply both. This would be in table conversation or just in general. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think even in general, Americans are squeamish about these kinds of topics of a terrible accident or a bloody kind of operation.
Mike, is that also maybe more with older Americans than the younger ones?
Is that right? That could be.
Well, I'm just asking. Yeah. Because a lot of younger ones today have been used to a lot of movies about violence. Hmm. I think it has to do more with the older generation.
That could be.
Than with the younger.
That's a good point, Jim.
And now we're older.
You are, not me. Okay. We want to learn about people under Roman numeral 7. You'll find that this is true. Everywhere you go, people are fearful. People are afraid to risk making friends because they don't want to be rejected. They don't want to be hurt. And people are afraid of things that are different. They don't see it as being different. They see it as being wrong. And I'm right and they're wrong. So Americans are no different in that. But if we let fear control us, we really won't do much. We won't be able to make friends. We won't be able to pursue what we want to pursue in life. So we have to step through that fear. And obviously we have to risk. Risk a failure, risk rejection, in order to make friends. On page 5, I want to tell you that friendships are limited. Every human being, you and me and everybody, have deep desires and deep hopes that we could be loved and accepted and valued as a person, just for who we are, not on the basis of what we do or don't do, and in spite of our mistakes. We want to be valued and appreciated. And I think that's fairly normal. But the difficulty is that if we look to other people for this kind of acceptance and this kind of love and appreciation, people will always fail us at some point. We'll feel hurt or rejected. And there's a part of us that can only be satisfied in that deep way by God, by Jesus Christ. He is the one who will never fail, never disappoint, never reject a person who trusts in Him. And this verse here at the bottom says, whoever believes in Him will not be disappointed. So if we as people, if you and I, put all of our hope in this way, in other people, we're bound to be disappointed. And we're bound to feel hurt and rejected. But if we put this trust in Jesus Christ, He is the one who will never let us down and never disappoint us in this way. Okay, I think we have a few minutes left. And if you have questions, we'll try to answer them. Yes, Jim.
Could I make a comment on the customs?
Sure.
One that I'd like to add to that is that in many cultures, a person has to ask you something two or three times before you know they're really sincere, and then you're free to accept. When Americans ask you something, they're sincere the first time. The reason I said this is we had a Filipino young man living in our home, and he went away from the table many times hungry because my wife would say, Romy, would you like some potatoes or meat after his first helping? And he'd say, no, thank you. Well, my wife quit asking then because when he said no, she thought he means no. But he was waiting for her to ask the third time, and then he was free in his culture to accept.
Hmm.
So he went away hungry. We thought he didn't want any more. We were very happy for him to have more. So when Americans offer you something, if they take the initiative, they're sincere the first time, and you're free to accept.
Good point. Any other questions? Comments?
Yeah, I have one comment.
Yes.
That before I accepted Christ, before I accepted Jesus, I had very few friends.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, before I accepted the Lord, I kind of nervous to make friends.
Hmm.
But after that, after I accepted, I became Christian, then I feel constantly. And I feel certainly that I gain more friends.
Hmm.
So I think that the Lord put more strength in me to go out to make friends, make sociable, and I gain, day by day, I gain more friends. So I think that's the point.
Good. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any other comments or questions? Okay, excuse me.
I want to make a question back reference to the custom on money. Is I used to live with American family before, like the noon and table, and of course, I would always wait until finally my family, the head of the house, like my father. Sit first, or if I ask my grandfather, my grandpa sit first, and he starts to eat, and I had to wait on the table for this, and we go in and sit. But in here, I don't know, I feel at the beginning quite a bit comfortable because they always tell you, go ahead, don't wait. Because, you know, I'm not as glad to see at the same time because, well, they are provision for
Yeah.
I don't know if the monks come in here.
Sure.
We do it the opposite. We get it together when monks come in. But in here, it seems to have it and focus on it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good observation, and that may be a function of Americans are going in so many different directions that this person comes in and grabs lunch, and this person comes in, and whereas in your culture, the dinner is an event. Everybody is going to be, and it's a time to eat and partake together. Just a difference in view. Jim?
It is in a number of American homes, though. If you started eating without being told to, it would be an offense. For instance, it is in our etiquette to wait until the hostess, the wife, sits down, and when she lifts her fork, you're free to lift your fork. Unless she knows your food's going to get cold and she's still doing some serving, and then she may say, please go ahead. And when she does, that's fine, go ahead. But to just sit down and presume you can always start would be wrong. You'd offend some people. So I think it's either you watch the hostess when she starts, or the man of the house. Sometimes it's either. If he starts, you can start. But if she tells you to go ahead, then go ahead.
Okay. Well, good. I think we'll wind up our time here. Let me just pray for us, a short prayer, and then we can be dismissed. Father, thank you that you have created this thing called friendship, and that you desire that each of us have deep, lasting friends. And Lord, I thank you that you want to be our closest friend. I pray for these people that they could each experience the joy of having friendships with Americans, and that their time here would be successful and fruitful in their studies and as they pursue their educational goals and their social goals. So we thank you that we can learn from one another, and help us to know how to proceed in this matter of making friends. We ask it in your name. Amen. Thank you.